Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
All right, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is a friend of the show. It's Mr. Pete Gilbert, or Mr. Pete, as Lamar Jackson would say, from WBAL. Joining us here, if you're watching on YouTube, he does not have his video going, which I hate to put him on blast. Sounds like his studio is a little bit of a mess right now. So other than that, how are we doing tonight, man?
Other than that, we are lit. We're all good. Once we get to the first quarter Monday night, we'll officially be at the quarter pole. And the Ravens are sitting at 3-1. And if I'd have told you that, they'd be 3-1 after the backfield was destructed. I think you feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're feeling the same way, and that is why we wanted to get you on here to dice up what has been known as the quarter pole of the NFL season, which apparently that was like never the correct way to say it anyway, because if you like follow horse racing, which a lot of people from around here do, obviously, the quarter pole is actually the final quarter in a horse race
right. Before
you get to the end. So that was never correct to begin with, but it's definitely not correct now with the 17-game schedule, but just even another wrench thrown into that. But we wanted to get you in here to get your insight because unlike us, you are you're a professional of sorts. You have a budget, real producers.
Of sorts, I like that.
Yeah, you can actually be on the facility. You're not treated like a second-rate citizen. So we wanted to get you on here to get your expert perspective to dice up the first quarter of the season, if that sounds like a plan to you.
My pleasure, guys.
So, first of all, and I guess I kind of touched on it just there, but it's been a while since we had you on. I think you and I had a little one-on-one chat for the first time you were on the pod back at the beginning of the year. Maybe that was like March or something like that, February. A lot has happened between now and then. How have, just general check-in with you and the team, how have things been going this year, and where would you say the head is at right now?
I mean, personally, hey, the work is great. They continue to pay me to talk about sports, and God bless me for that. Happy to be at a station that is steady and has a really great foundation. Hearst is the best media company to work for, so I'm thrilled to be there. And they allow me to go and jump in with the Ravens relentlessly, and that's it's a real privilege. And since from March till now, it's almost so much of what we've done is that, and it's what's been so enjoyable the last several months is getting back to actually seeing people in person. A Zoom press conference just does not work the way in person does. You just, in terms of body language, is so much harder to read on Zoom. There are also opportunities as the player or coach enters and leaves for a little quick, maybe conversation as well, a follow-up question that's not part of it. You can get a little further background and a little more engagement, and you get to read these guys, and the players are more themselves. They like it better. I mean, James Prochet in particular, he just lit up when he got the opportunity to take part in an in-person podium session, and it really shined. And it just, it's been great to get back to that. The storylines have been insane, really, for this team. When you consider, go back, Lamar had COVID. Missed the first 10 days of training camp. The running backs all need season-ending surgery. Ronnie Stanley's not back yet. Nick Boyle's not back yet. Marcus Peters goes down and is done. And you're thinking, how in the world are they going to make it work? And they have found ways, which is such a tribute to the foundation that they have as a franchise. And if there's no panic at the top, there's not going to be panic down below. And that is what we have seen thus far. So, it's been... it's a fascinating season. We finally had a drama-free game in terms of the outcome. You weren't stressing out the final seconds of it, but I expect that to be the outlier. I expect a whole lot of drama going forward for this team in terms of the end of games. And that's how they're going to be built, because the offensive line is just not, I don't think, going to ever get to the point where they're just going to be able to, you know, road grade teams. They're not there. So it's, I think by and large, especially when you look at the Bengals that are now decent, the Browns that are very good, second toughest schedule in the NFL, it's going to be hard to just not be in close games throughout.
Spot on. First of all, plus 10 points to you, Pete, for not saying living the dream, which I thought was going to be the first follow-up to that. But yeah, this team, this Ravens team, has become a 24/7 news cycle. And I started laughing when you mentioned Lamar, you know, getting COVID, because that seems like it was 15 light years ago at this point, considering everything that's happened. So going back to that point, you know, covering training camp and preseason, what would you describe as the vibe, the feeling around the building after all those injuries began to pile up and just kind of all those issues occurring at once throughout training camp?
Well, the vibe was of 2015. You know, right. I mean, more that happened at the beginning of the season and, you know, points forward in terms of you had the injuries, you had the close games. You know, I mean, it's just a relentless assault of one-score losses. You know, to that season, it just felt like nothing could go right. And that was definitely the vibe you got for this. And you felt like, you know, you go back to 2019 where the team was so good and 14-2, the far and away the best team in the NFL, and they then throw it away. They were not prepared, as they frankly just overlooked the Titans in the playoff game. They admitted it. They did it. And just from that point forward, given that here, you felt like maybe – did they have a window there that was now coming shut because you could only go so long with Lamar and a rookie deal? And, you know, it just felt like it was, you know, and that was probably, I guess, you know, even though I've been covering this team since 2004, it was somehow ignorant on my part to not recognize that foundationally, that, you know, and structurally, this team is going to be able to handle adversity better than most others. And we have seen that time and again. And I think that what has changed maybe from 2015 to now is John Harbaugh's willingness to be creative and express to his coaches, do what you need to do, find a way. I don't care how. Whatever you need to invent. Let's imagine. Let's be big. And, you know, and that has allowed them to find ways to overcome this point. It's not like they've had a cakewalk in terms of a schedule at this point. You know, I mean, they've gone 3-1 and they led 14-0 in the game they lost. So to overcome that sense of, you know, a little doom and gloom, it would have been easy to fall into that trap and wallow in, because I promise you, John Harbaugh couldn't help but think about 2015 to some degree. I mean, those were the feelings, but you learn from that. And they've grown since then. And he's a better coach now. And this foundation of the franchise is stronger. It's older and it's more, you know, it's more tested, and this is the result we're seeing.
Yeah. And you, you did invoke the 2015 season, which I don't think you did lightly. I think after week one, that loss to the Raiders. And I'm curious about that because, you know, no Ravens fan wants to see the words 2015, especially not at the beginning of a season when they're just starting out. But like, it was hard not to feel that way with all the injuries that had gone down and just sort of the bad juju that kind of felt like had collectively built up around them. And then it all sort of, I feel like, culminated with that loss to the Raiders, which could have gone a million different ways as a win, and it winds up being a loss at the end there. And I'm curious, like, do you have a sense, like, if you can remember back to what the vibe around the building, we talk about the macro vibe around the building in a sense, but like right after that game, how do you think they felt? Do you think Harbaugh was kind of fearing the 2015 thing, or was he just kind of tunnel vision, eyes forward?
I think tunnel vision is, and that's probably, again, going back to kind of what they learned, that you have to do that. You have to be fully in that mode. You can't wallow. There's just no time for it in an NFL season. And that's much to their credit. But yeah, I mean, the loss to the Raiders, considering they'd never before lost a 14-point lead, right? And here they go losing that. So you just, combined with all the injuries, it just felt like the kind of start that said, okay, but maybe it turns out maybe that was a low point, you know? And maybe they come all the way back from there. I don't know, but maybe it's not 2015, it's 2021. It's a different team, it's a different coaching staff, it's different players. And you know, we like to fall back on history as a teacher, but maybe it's not. And it's different people in a different time. And so it's a reminder for me that while it's important to study the history and to kind of know where guys have come from and where they've been. It doesn't necessarily mean that is a precursor. It doesn't mean that it's written. You can still change it, and that's much to their credit what they have done.
Absolutely, and that goes into Harbaugh's moniker that I hear so often, where he says, "Well, you either win or you learn, and you have to be able to move forward." You're absolutely right. There's not enough time in the season. You've got a longer season now. And considering all of that now, we're looking back through these first four games. How have they met or subverted your expectations in what ways? And, I like to compare this team to the Pittsburgh Steelers so much, who are in a tough spot right now. But again, you can just, no matter what the injuries are, no matter what it is, you can never count out John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, and they're kind of in different parallels. But pertaining to the Ravens, how have they, met or exceeded expectations so far?
Well, the evolved, clearly the undeniable evolving in the passing game, and Lamar's command of the passing game is that's the biggest difference. If you were to be told they aren't going to be able to run the ball, it's going to be shut down, and they're still going to find a way to win 23-7, and that would be unthinkable, right? And Lamar's going to throw for 300 yards. He's not going to throw a pick, and he's going to strike down the field. And that's where obviously, you can't help but give a lot of credit to the passing game play coaches that had been brought in, and T. Martin and Keith Williams. I mean, it's the complexity of the combined routes, the routes that are working off one another. It's so much more incongruous from what we saw before, where it was because I think before the idea was it was going to be only one route really mattered. Because the second, third probably weren't going to be significant. And whereas now they all are in concert with one another, and Lamar is able to truly understand where to go with it. He's throwing the ball by and large beautifully. And if Hollywood doesn't, have a drop season, he's got another 300-plus yard game there. And, he's going to throw for 4,500 yards this year. And the narratives about all the things they said he can't do are just the myths, the fallacies, they're being shown for the fallacies that they are. The kid can throw the ball. He can play quarterback. Oh, and he can run. And that's where they've gotten the point that they've gotten to. The Broncos clearly said, fine, we are going to dare you to throw the ball. The Chiefs said, we're going to dare you to throw the ball. Okay, cool. I'm going to throw it. And I actually have enough guys right now that are going to be able to go make plays in the pass game to catch it, and all about to get some reinforcements too. So that's utterly intriguing and the biggest difference so far for me.
And I'm glad you mentioned Williams and Martin. And I'm going to loop two questions that I wrote down here together, because I had one about sort of off-season additions, and then I had a specific question on Williams and Martin. We can kind of put those two together, because I think those are two of the biggest additions, and it's been harped on by plenty of people. But from the perspective of somebody who's been up close sort of watching them a little bit day in and day out, what is your kind of take on those two guys, and kind of what is the biggest difference that you see, maybe specifically from versus last year, where you had David Culley in the mix, for example?
I just think that they were brought here because this is specifically what they do. This is what they've excelled at. This is what they know. And I will give credit to John for going to Greg and saying, "Hey, I want to bring these guys in." And Greg, Greg is a run game, savant. Right, he can make a more creative run game than anybody else on the planet, but the passing game wasn't his greatest strength. It isn't, and the willingness to allow them to come in and not be threatened by them, but to embrace that's critical, and that's where you go back to the foundations of the franchise. Good franchises, you can do that. Bad ones doesn't work, and there's too much selfishness. This is a much more selfless group in that regard, and the way they were, first of all, the receivers during the drills nonstop, the way that they respond to the conversations that are being had. There is no blowing off. There is no, you know, glazed eyes when they're going through and going through the nuances of route running, of the different ways to catch the ball, try different experimental ways to work to get different sensors firing in your hands to be better pass catchers. All the little things that they do, the players have bought into it. They have new ideas, and this is what we're seeing. You know, is an explosive downfield passing attack that when you think about if they can maybe find it, get another running back that's a little more explosive. I still think trade is, you know, I would be shocked if they don't find, if DaCosta doesn't bring in another legitimate, not retread running back. Because clearly they even though Tyson Williams had the most burst of any of the four running backs for whatever reason, and I don't know the backstory or why he's fallen out of favor. And so it was kind of pretty clear when Roman was asked about him last week, like, yeah, he's just one of the guys. I'm like, yeah, but he's different because he's fast and they aren't, relatively speaking. And, you know, has shown the ability for some explosiveness in the run game, and he was deactivated. So if they don't trust him, the three guys we saw it, they right now they're just guys. And it, you know, that's where I would expect if they can to make an addition at some point at the running back game would allow them to then really take advantage of the fact that now you have a good passing game down the downfield.
Spot on, and they definitely need burst there. And tying back to what you were talking about earlier, it's just so interesting. Of course, Roman bringing in these two gentlemen that he hasn't worked with to spruce up this passing game, and then a guy like Sammy Watkins they bring in who has history with Roman and talked about how, you know, they've lacked the personnel to run what he knows Roman likes to run, and to kind of double down getting a veteran, bringing in Bateman, who we'll get to see eventually, all that good stuff. Was just, I feel like it's just the Coriolis effect in ways of John Harbaugh becoming like you said, more creative and open as opposed to, you know, the stern Harbaugh from the late 2000s, early 2010s. And it's really been fun to watch and fun to watch them adjust. And from your perspective, you know, being around the locker room and the facility, how would you describe the mood that has been in this building after each game? You know, if you think you could, and where it's at right now with 3-1 on the board with this homestand coming down the stretch.
Right now, it's really confident. You know, I do. I mean, there was some trepidation after week one, knowing they had Kansas City. It seemed that, you know, you just look at and just watching the games that they played, how they had started going back, you know, from 2018, it was a really close game. Probably should have won it. 2019, they got the better of you. You came back, but it really wasn't all that close. 2020 at home Monday night, not competitive really. You know, I mean, they had you. So I mean, that's what they're facing, and there was tight. I mean, there weren't a lot of smiles. They knew they had to take care of business that night, and then once they did, that was such a validation of so many different things for them. I mean, it's a validation for Lamar. On a personal level, it's a validation for Odafe Oweh, who is a guy who was drafted without having a sack in his last year at Penn State and making just game-breaking plays. And so there was just so much. Then it was a sigh of relief. Okay, here we go. And they go to Detroit, and, you know, for whatever reason, it should have been a blowout. Hollywood drops the balls, and it comes down to having to need a 66-yard field goal. That goes through, and then you start to think, you know, it's a complete 180 flip from week one. We're like, wait, anything's possible now? You kidding me? That dude just made the longest field goal in the history of the NFL. Okay, Lamar's back. He's a little dinged up, but he's going to get healthier. He's going to be bad. All of it's coming together. And then sluggish start, which is not surprising, in Denver. You know, you just going out there is tough. It just is. And Denver's all feeling like bullies. They're 3-0. They have some defensive playmakers, and it was a slow first quarter. When Javonte Williams ran for 31 yards and drug everyone, Marlon most specifically, that was such a wake-up call to the entire team. Said this is not acceptable what we're doing. we're going to have to play Ravens football. Next time with the ball, the Ravens right, marched right down the field offensively with a touchdown, and defensively the rest of the way, we're a much more physical team. The pride showed up. It's the kind of thing where you can go through so much scheme and technique and all the little X's and O's about football, but sometimes it's about just your pride when you have elite athletes on both sides of the ball. And are you going to step up and really just man up at that point? And they did. Okay. So you've seen all these things in that regard kind of come one after another, which leaves them now after 3 out of 4 on the road to start the year. You don't leave Baltimore for 5 weeks, 4 home games and a bye. This is your time to feast. And this is time to build. It's time to start getting other guys back. You get Rashad Bateman. You get Miles Boykin. You can maybe Nick Boyle. Maybe Ronnie Stanley. The idea of those guys. And then you're like, okay, here we go. We're coming.
And I like the way you frame that of like kind of coming to a point where you need to show a little bit more pride. And that's kind of, I think, a mature thing that a lot of people have to go through in life. And I think it's maybe encapsulated by what we've seen from Hollywood Brown this year, where you mentioned the rough game that he had against the Lions. And then we saw it yesterday as we're taping this, that he bounces back against the Broncos with a big game. And I feel like, and maybe I'm projecting a little bit here, but I feel like, and maybe there is evidence of this with the Soldiers tweet, but you know, I feel like maybe that's not something that necessarily would have happened even just a year ago, but having seen it happen, I think was a pretty big development. Do you think that we've, and I wrote this down as like, it feels like we've seen some maturation happen with him, like pretty much before our eyes. Is that something you'd agree with, having spent some time around him?
Oh, no doubt. And it's physical and it's mental, but even more so it's mental. And I mean, he went through the off season last year, really working out, trying to cut his body, really, you know, we watched all the workout videos as he was preparing for the season, but that's all superfluous. If you're not really, again, everybody's out there is ripped. Everyone out there is fast. Everyone out there is strong. You know, it's not just about that. It's about practicing the little things the right way every time you do it. And if you don't do that, you know, you're not going to succeed. And that when you do suffer a setback, you learn from it. You don't wallow in it. It takes reps, honestly, going through that. He had it, you know, you go back, he had the drops, you know, and then was after complaining in Pittsburgh last year, right? After that game. And I had drops and it was going, oh, well, you know what? He bowed up from that. But it's peaks and valleys. Nothing's a straight line. You don't just go a continual, you know, arc forward. It's up as 2 steps forward, 1 back, gentle, all the way up. That's the way life, that's how life is. It zigzags. And the faster you learn how to understand that and deal with it, then it comes so much quicker. And that's what we saw. You know, it didn't take him weeks to bounce back. It wasn't gradual. You know, it was because he's gone through this before, he learned very quickly from it. And then offered the greatest catch, one of the greatest just athletic feats for a Ravens wide receiver ever. Right? I mean there obviously are more impactful receptions, plenty of them, but show me a better one. Just show me who made a better play on the ball in terms of just all out running at 22 miles an hour, laying out as far as you possibly could, and the ball never even nudged in his hands. Who's done that better?
I would say Joe Flacco when he went out for that pass from Troy Smith in like 2000.
Fair,
or whatever
fair.
That was, but
okay.
Other than that.
Spot on. Yeah. And it feels like that valley that he had last week is such a stepping stone, a springboard even in his maturation, because he had to go all out. He couldn't choose not to dive after that ball. He had to. And that's part of being committed. That's the mental part that you're talking about, the reps that you're talking about, seeing it, envisioning it, all that beautiful stuff. And the guy who's been seeing it and doing it is Lamar Jackson. And in a similar vein, how would you describe what's gone into Lamar's preparation and maybe his perspective as well as his kind of outlook on what this career of his is and how much more passing he's had to do in comparison to the last few years and how he's kind of navigated that whole process?
Well, I think so much of it goes back to the Lamar wants to be a passer. He would rather throw the ball than run. Running is cool. I mean, the B button touchdown against the Bengals, in 2019. That's an all-time highlight.
He doesn't work to be a good passer or a good runner. He just has that God-given ability.
That's just purely instinctive.
He never tries. He doesn't lift weights. He doesn't run. None of it.
He's not practicing breaking ankles. He just breaks ankles. Okay. But he was, that's in his back pocket. That ultimately, because also he knows that at some point ain't going to be there. Right. I mean, if you want to have a long career in the NFL, you're not running like that in 5 years. You're just not. He wants to be a great quarterback. And we are seeing the seeds of, and the growth that he can be that. And it's not just the his mechanics are better, his understanding of the offense is better, his reading of defenses is better. This dude wants it. He wants to be great, and he's a real. I mean, he's a ferocious competitor, and that drive I think is really where that's what again it's going to separate guys that come in here with talent that don't reach the heights that he, I mean, he's already obviously had the MVP season, but for him, it's about a Super Bowl, and that it won't matter for him until that happens. And that's really cool to see when you see that level of just physical gifts, but a drive in to go with it. It's why he has the ability to be one of the special ones of all time.
Definitely. And speaking of special ones, I mean, we can flip this over to the defensive side. And I'm curious, like, through the first four games, like, I wouldn't say they're a faceless unit because they have a lot of good players, but there's just not as much personality as there has been in years past. So I'm kind of curious, like, what your perspective is and what your read is on who the leaders of the defense are right now, because Suggs has been out of the picture for a couple of years now, which is weird to think about, but there's not really that de facto elder statesman out there for them. Like, maybe it's Justin Houston, but he's been there for 8 weeks or whatever. So I'm just kind of curious what you think about that.
Vocally, it's Pernell McPhee and Calais Campbell. But again, Calais, he was awesome in Denver. And it's a shame, but statistically, it didn't read that way. That dude wrecked people all game long. He did so many good things up front, tying up people and so close to sacks and being in the backfield, disrupting plays. He was great. But again, he's probably in the last year of his career. They know that these are guys, they're great talkers and they've been there and they've done it. They are the sages of the team. But here's the leader is Chuck Clark. He's not good at the podium. He's not good at speeches. He is their leader. He hits like a freight train. He is directing traffic in the back end. He earned a second deal, and he is a guy who they all look to and say, yeah. Okay, that's the guy.
That's his defense.
Say again?
That's his defense. That when you can just tell the way he's communicating and directing traffic, that is Chuck Clark's defense.
Yep. I mean, Marlon obviously is a great talker and unbelievable talent. But as a cornerback, you're just not in position to be the leader because you're focused so much, on an island so often. Chuck is running the show. He has to be the leader. And again, vocally, he's not going to give the speeches, but he says what he needs to say. He says it succinctly, and the points are made, and there's growth there too from this team. What we've seen as well, the tackling was abysmal for a lot of it. And I asked Wink about that, and first thing he says, we're not making excuses, but I'm like, look, you don't get to practice it like you used to at all. And then after guys start dropping, you're certainly not looking to do a lot of tackling in training camp, right? And so I believe wholeheartedly that they if you don't practice it, you're not going to be great at it. And that's a real thing. But they have gotten better, and that's the one good thing about going forward in games. While guys get more tired, a little more beat up, you do get better at tackling the more you do it, and you just don't do enough of it in the offseason and in training camp like we used to.
Yeah, definitely. And to your point there, Marlon is probably their best player, but if his Twitter account or the first two episodes of Guru Punch podcast are any indication, I would have a lot of trouble taking him seriously if I were a player, but that's a non sequitur, I guess. In a similar vein, sorry if I'm jumping on you here, Spencer, but I have this one pulled up in front of me. If you could get a one-on-one interview with Patrick Queen right now, what do you think you would want to get out of that interview from him?
Or even like a Ted Lasso sense, like being his sports psychologist.
Yeah, he certainly, I mean, being a goldfish would help, right? I still feel like watching him play sometimes, he feels like if I just get there through my speed, that's all that matters. But it's more than just getting there. It's making the play when you're there. And there's a guy who, you know, started, what, 8 games at LSU, 8 or 9 games, and is in his second year. So he's still just a young, raw player with incredible gifts. But he is not – I don't think – I guess my guess is that I would ask him, like, are you really recognizing and seeing things of really understanding what's happening offensively from your opponents that you can then just – you don't have to think, but you can just go make the play? My guess is no, if you were to give a truly honest answer, because too often he is lost, or if he's there, he's a little tentative, and being tentative is a result of you're thinking of, like, is this right? Am I accurate when I'm reading? Am I believing that? And I don't think there's a pure self-belief at that point, in his own recognition of what he's seeing. And can that be fixed? Absolutely. It's, you know, reps will fix it so long as you have your confidence broken. I will say one thing. I think Patrick Queen is supremely confident and that ultimately he will figure this out. The conversations that I've had with him, unfortunately, have only been on Zoom, but they definitely, you know, you get a sense that this guy is special in that regard as well, the belief himself. But he needs more practice. He needs more reps. He jumped in as a rookie, as a starting middle linebacker, and probably would have been better suited to learn more, right? To maybe do half special teams and then a sub package and grow and then become like a lot of the undrafted middle linebackers through the Ravens history had done and then gone to be so very good. But that was not his path. So I think we're seeing those growing pains and, but I will say you don't seem to get as much time as you used to. And, you know, when they elevated Josh Bynes to the 53 from the practice squad, if you're Queen, you can't help but believe that that's a direct response to you. So, and then at one point, you know, Bynes came in when Queen was struggling Sunday. Bynes came in. Queen went back out there shortly and played better afterwards. So, you know, I just think for him, it's going to be reps, and you just hope that the whatever indecision comes from him, you maybe just a lack of full commitment of making the play that comes because of inexperience doesn't cost him games. It's they aren't at the worst of times. They aren't, you know, like Cam lobbed a ball up in the rain in New England, the worst of times, right? You know, where you just feel lost. And if you can avoid those while he continues to get better, then he'll be fine.
Spot on. And it feels like at times he's a guy that's super involved on social media. And we heard Hollywood Brown just laugh. And that was so cathartic in a way from the fan perspective. It felt like Hollywood Brown just steps right up and he's like, oh, yeah, I think it's funny. You know, comes out, makes a huge play. But it feels like Patrick Queen sometimes lives in this fear of being on Instagram or Twitter looking bad in a game. And it contributes to that indecision you're talking about. And yeah, Bynes gets elevated. I mean, Eric DaCosta has become the discount bargain shopper of all time at the trade deadline the last couple of years. Ngakoue, Peters, obviously. And do you foresee him doing that again towards this trade deadline? And if so, which does feel somewhat likely, where do you think they look?
Yeah, I don't think it's a linebacker. I think that they're going to, like, he'll figure it out, and there's enough good pieces around him that are going to grow stronger that they'll survive that. If there's a play to be made, it's at running back, or if you're worried about tackle health, that's where I would go. Because the idea of having Andre Smith as a swing tackle, that's not a recipe for success. He stole a touchdown yesterday, after, you know, for just an utterly unnecessary face mask for a guy who had no chance to have any impact on the play. And it's because, I mean, like Andre Smith was, you know, he was a bust in Cincinnati. God bless him. You know, I mean, I don't know personally, I'm not knocking his, you know, personally, I'm just talking professionally. He was a bust in Cincinnati. You know, he didn't play last year. He was, you know, he's 10 or 11 years since he was drafted. And here, you know, it's just not, it's not going to be him. And if you have to come to the point where you're relying on him at a crucial moment, it's hard to see that going really well. So that's where the, you know, when Tyree Phillips went down again, he should be back at some point. But, you know, Villanueva leaves on, you know, for, you know, they say it's not a big deal. I don't know. We've heard that before. We'll wait and see. Stanley clearly, you know, after week one, like, yeah, that ankle ain't right. So that's where I would think if there's a deal, if you can find a way to boost the offensive line. Because, again, if you can boost the offensive line a little bit, that helps the running back situation in any event. That makes a big difference. So I would say, hey, you know, if you can shore up that O-line, that's the only really big question mark for me for this team going forward.
Definitely. And switching gears into the coaching staff a little bit, we've had a lot of talk about Wink Martindale the last couple seasons, maybe getting a head coaching gig. He's having another solid season here to an extent. I mean, it's at the very least turning around at this point. What do you think it would take for him to be hired away as a head coach finally? And who would your best bet to replace him be, whether inside the building or out?
Well, good question. I was surprised that Wink didn't. I mean, after 2019, you know, he and Roman both obviously had opportunities for interviews, but he just, you know, I mean, they were there. Apparently, there was just like afterthought stuff. And I look at Wink, you know, when you stand there in terms of who do you want to represent you? You know, does he know himself? First of all, does he know himself? Is he confident enough in his abilities to hire good people around him? Has he seen what a successful franchise is? All those things are, yeah, the way he comports himself at the microphone. He's a guy I'd love to have as the head of my franchise. You know, I think that, you know, he looks like a football guy, but you talk to him for 5 minutes and he's not just a biker. You know, he's a very smart guy. He's thoughtful. He's interesting. To me, I'm surprised that he did not get more. I mean, I can see why Roman is much less of that in my regard, in terms of just being a public face, because that's such an important part of being the head coach. It's so relative to what you're going to do. And I thought Wink would be, you know, I think he'd be, I think if, you know, if you're in the right situation, you know, you go to a place where it's terrible, there's probably a reason it's terrible, and you may not be able to overcome it. But in the right situation, I think Wink can be a great head coach. Internally, I don't know that there's someone right here on staff. I don't know that they look and say, oh, yep, there's the guy. So, you know, at that point, then it's, you look at who does John know and trust on the outside, and because that's what he's done in the past. And I don't have a specific name for that, but that's been his history, is that he hires someone with whom he has history.
Yeah, so speaking of John, a little bit of a beef brewing, it would appear, with Vic Fangio of Denver. And this was something that I think Spencer and I very much didn't want to really have to discuss too much, but Fangio went ahead and made it an issue today. John responded. He had some petty little barbs that he threw out there that I thought were kind of cleverly done, well-placed, and a good job by John. Of course, I'm pretty biased as a big fan of John's, but what's your take on all this? Is it something that really registers on your radar? Do you think it has a chance to have legs beyond this week? What do you make of this whole 5-yard gate?
Well, I mean, I guess when it comes to having a little petty argument, I'm all for it. That's fine. That's part of the fun, right? I don't mind that. I think it's ultimately, it's such a, to me, it was such a small, it just wasn't a big thing. One way or the other, it just wasn't that big a deal. And for it to have become a thing strikes me as funny. My initial thoughts were, John, why are you doing that? If there are yards that the defense isn't even trying to stop you, do they even really count? I don't know. I mean, obviously, very clearly, the streak is a meaningful thing to John and it's a franchise. So, okay, yeah, that they were going to do whatever they could to get it. Now, And so again, I'm kind of like, eh, I probably wouldn't have done it, but whatever. It's kind of my thought about it. For the Broncos, though, whoa. Wait, you're getting upset about it? You're trying to score with 3 seconds left in the game. When you're down 16 and you're going to complain that, you didn't, that the Ravens played all the way to zero. Well, stop it. I mean, Fangio's response is hilarious. When you say, I expect that kind of crap from Harbaugh, I'm like, whoa. Wait a second. You got more problems right now, pal, than worrying about whether or not John Harbaugh, had him run for 5 yards to crack 100. All right. Your quarterbacks just got knocked out. You couldn't run the ball. You couldn't pass. You guys were a mess, and you got beat deep relentlessly. Why don't you worry about that? So, again, initially I'm like, yeah, I probably wouldn't do it. Didn't think it was that huge a deal, but the response from Denver just makes me, all right, well, fine, let's go then. It's preposterous to be upset about it. But in that same vein, cool. You want to add a little extra intrigue, a little spice? All right, I'm down with that.
I was okay with the way that he initially said, I thought it was bullshit. Like, I'm fine with that if you want to be like old school, like unwritten rules football guy. But to, tread into the territory of sanctimony and make it about player safety, I'm just a little, you lose me a little bit there, Slick Vic.
Oh, yeah, player safety. What's no one going to get hurt on a pass play in the end zone? But I mean, that's just stupid. Look, if Lamar goes around the left side and pulls his hamstring on that, yeah, John's going to have to answer for that as well. He should. And again, there's a minimal chance of that, but there's a chance. So that's why, again, I'd probably be like, yeah, I'll just take a knee. But they wanted the record. It's meaningful and important to them. They went and got it, and you didn't stop it. So shut up.
And on top of it, the extra confusing bewilderment for me is kind of the shots taken at the Ravens organization, one which Vic Fangio has coached for, has ties to. A reporter today, I can't recall which it was, but mentioned, do you kind of find this a little strange considering the Harbaugh family relationship with Fangio? He coached with Jim for, 2009 through 2014. He's familiar with Roman. It's not like this is some foreign team. And John Harbaugh mentioned how he was like, yeah, I thought we were on good terms. We had a nice little chat before.
Yeah, and Bobby tweeted today a video of like 4 days ago of him talking about like how they're like one of the classiest organizations in the league. So it was just very, very strange. I don't know what was in his coffee this morning, but he kind of got
something. Some wires got crossed at the end of that game, and I feel like it secretly was that maybe Fangio was taking some sort of solace in the fact that they held the Ravens under 100 yards and whatever, but it just ends up adding on to this emotional drug at last week, the delay of game, the kick, the play on 4th and 19, the week before, Lamar picks 6, they have this emotional win, overtime game in the first game in front of fans in Vegas, the sky's falling, the Ravens lose, they're too hurt to win. It's just been, at this point, we're having you on, Pete, to talk about how the Ravens have played through the first quarter of the season, and it feels like they are, it feels like it's December at this point. It's been an exhausting kind of narrative-driven start. And at this point, what do you expect to be the message from John as we enter this magnificent, Baltimore-tober where the Ravens are going to play this home stretch? And how is he going to reapply this team and keep their focus on the ultimate goal day-to-day, winning the day?
If the task was today to give a speech to the team and a message, it would be, I told you so. I told you we'd be okay. I told you to trust us and we'd find a way. And look, we did. And so when I ask you to do something in practice, when I bark at you about this, or when we talk about why this is important, you understand why? This is why. And because we're able to survive, things like we've seen thus far. And I think that, again, if you can't get to where you want to go without buy-in, and the players buy in. You talk to players that used to play there, and 90% of them talk about, yeah, that's it. Really is the structure, the belief. There is obviously always a sense of it's a business, but they care more than the other franchises do. And so, you know, and that buys a lot. It when they don't, because if players don't buy in, they start tuning guys out. And occasionally it has happened in Baltimore too. You look at 2007, that crew had tuned out Brian Billick. They were done dealing with him and ego that said, I, you know, it's not me, it's you guys that's why we've lost nine in a row here. And Steve Bisciotti felt that too. And that's where they were. So, I mean, it's not that it's not ever been part of the franchise, but after where they are right now, they've learned, much to their credit, they've learned from their mistakes. And that's why they just, you know, they handle adversity better. They aren't perfect. They obviously, you make draft selections that don't work out. You make free agents, you know, selections. It's like guys that don't work out, but they keep trying because they have core values and beliefs that they will hold firm to. And when they stay true to those, if you stay true to that, if you're consistent, the players see that you're consistent. They know, they just want to know who they're dealing with, right? They don't want to deal with anybody who's two-faced. And Harbaugh is not two-faced. He's straight up with them. And that is so meaningful to the players. And therefore, then they give to him and to the franchise more than maybe, you know, some other players give to other teams. And that, when you're looking at all, how many one possession, you know, 1 point games, final second plays, if it's going to come down to that, which team are you going to bank on? The one that's players are buying in more than the other one? Yeah, that's right.
Definitely. And speaking of that home stretch, injuries have obviously been a huge part of the story of the season so far. And I think thankfully for them, there are guys that despite suffering injuries are slated to come back at some point. What's kind of your current read on the injury situation? And when are you expecting back some of these key players? It seems like Bateman might be due back this week, but you still got Nick Boyle hanging out there. You have Ronnie Stanley sort of hanging out there in a sort of a weird state where he's trying to come back. What do you kind of make of all the guys that are maybe slated to come back at this point?
Yeah, like 98% Bateman's back this week. Very curious to see. Again, he's just such an unknown quantity at this point, right? We have no idea what he might bring. Might be great. He might not have an impact at all. It's just, you just don't know. Boykin, I think too, watching him run at practice on the side, you know, he's running full speed. So I expect, you know, he should be there. I'd be surprised if he wasn't there this week too. Which then leaves you, you know, that's a lot of wide receivers. Tylan Wallace, I think, probably is getting prepared to not be dressed anytime soon, probably, if those guys come back. You know, as far as Stanley, when he went from being questionable to out to he wasn't close to playing, I'm like, oh, that was really week one. He was not ready to come back and play. And he, you know, he regressed. And after that, I mean, yeah, go, if, you know, if you can stomach it, go watch the injury again and you see why it's tenuous at best. And you may not get a very good Ronnie Stanley at any point this year. It may not be until 2022 that he's able to fully be himself again. Question is, can you, you know, how high a percentage do you need him to be? And does he himself feel he needs to be? To be effective and be better than, you know, the guys that would be there otherwise. And that's where he's got to figure that out. And the coaching staff has to come back and they can marry that idea and that premise of where they are. But I don't know that how close it is, considering just the way they talked about him changed so dramatically from the end of week one till this past week, even.
For sure. And moving into that, the Ravens have survived it and now they're home again after surviving 3-1 with three games on the road. And what do you expect to be the main story? Let's play fortune teller here going into, you know, that bye week in week eight towards the end of October. What do you think is the perception around this team when we jump forward to there?
I think that they'll finally be talking about, on a national level, Lamar as a down-the-field passer, which they did not do at all on Sunday night or Monday. I thought I was kind of dumbstruck, right? I mean, here's Lamar. They didn't run the ball. He rushed for 28 yards. He threw for 316 and, you know, hit and hit big plays. I mean, if you just wanted to roll out a highlight reel, it was beautiful, and no one talked about it. I think he's going to continue with some performances like that that will force them to, particularly those that were not in a believer that he could do this, that we can't ignore it anymore. I think that is going to be the theme. I think it will continue to grow in the passing game, and which, oddly enough, is that I think going to open things up in the running game, which is hilarious to think because it has been so much of the running game in 2019 for sure, set up whatever, you know, Lamar to throw 36 touchdown passes because no one ever thought he was ever going to throw the ball because why would you? Because they ran the ball so effectively. And that's, I think it's almost going in the other direction right now. And that's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch some certain national guys in particular have to accept the fact this guy's a quarterback and he's really good at it. Cause I think this team is getting better. They're not, you know, you could say, oh, at this point, well, they had all those injuries and they had some fluky wins and, you know, this isn't really who they are. They're going to regress to the mean. No, I'm like, they grew through these 4 weeks. They're stronger now than they were. I think, you know, ultimately when it comes, you know, when they were opening up in Las Vegas and they know better who they are and what they may have. And so therefore I'm like, get out the way. And the key is that you got to feast on these four home games in a row because the rest of the way, you got a lot of road trips and the point where you got to go Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, while Cleveland goes Cleveland or Baltimore by Baltimore, that's rough. And Cleveland is loaded, you know, talent-wise. Even though they only scored 14 points, they kind of win. Credit to them on the road in an ugly rock fight, getting a win in Minnesota. So this is the time where you have to continue to build on it and continue this momentum and grow on it. And I really do believe they will.
Absolutely. I think we both feel the same way. I think that's well said by you, Bud, just like everything else on this interview was very well said by you. We appreciate you.
You guys haven't yelled at me at all tonight.
I mean, I think it's a low key.
Yeah, spot on. I don't buy that for a second. No, you're all too nice.
No, of course we're too nice. It's a low key mood. It's a Monday night, like you said. You got a glass of vino.
We're laying back, sipping vino, having a nice, you know, conversation here. This is a fireside chat. We're not here to yell and scream.
Give me Roy Firestone. That's great. God.
Well, let me.
You guys are too young to remember Roy Firestone's ESPN show. I mean, that was his conversations were just. They were so good. Oh, it was such great stuff.
I'm going to
back on YouTube and check that out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see if I can get anything out of that. But I'm glad that this was like that. And it was an enjoyable, kind of easy experience for you. I mean, it's been three wins in a row here. I mean, that's pretty easy living for us and probably pretty easy living for you. If things go sour, let's say maybe next loss, we'll get you on here and we'll scream at you for an hour. How does that sound?
I'm down with that. I'm good with that. I tell you, it has made, you know, you know, I do this late Sunday night TV show with Keith Mills, Ravens wrap up, and we do it. You know, you have Sunday night football, you have NBC's postgame show, then you have a half hour of 11 news, and then we get the ball. And like, we didn't start till 12:30 on after this past Sunday night. And when you're going up, when you're doing that show, and the Ravens like just laid an egg, and you know nobody's watching. Because they're pissed off, they don't want to relive any of it. That's not fun. That's hard. When they keep winning, and you know people are staying up to watch, and or maybe they said, you know what, I want to DVR that one because we got to check on that. We want more of it. That's what I'm down with. And so when the people always ask me if I'm a Ravens fan, and no, I'm not. But my job is generally more interesting and fun when they're winning. So and I also make more money. So go Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's interesting that's how it works for you when you're
you support them winning.
Yeah, when you're in the and support your wallet. When you're in like the
correct
YouTube live streaming game after a loss, like you get a lot of the angry people that are still awake and do want to take that anger out on someone. So we've had that happen in the past. Some playoff losses have been particularly difficult in that respect, but someone's got to do the job, and just like someone's got to do your job, and you do a great job.
I hate Greg Roman.
You and Keith and Bobby and all the boys and everyone, you guys do a tremendous job, and we did want to give you a chance to plug all that work you do, plug whatever social media, anything you got on the docket that you want to get out there to our great listeners, who I'm sure a lot of them are already familiar with it, but if they're not, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm on Twitter at WBAL Pete, and Ravens wrap up. We put so much work into that. It's to do a especially like a 4 o'clock game. You've lost 3 hours of turnaround time for that show, by as opposed to a 1 o'clock game, and it's rewarding to know that people watch it, and the feedback from that is greatly appreciated. So if you haven't watched it, give it a watch. Let us know what you think. You just yell at me on Twitter about it, good, bad, or ugly, just whatever. I'd love to know. And I mean, the ratings are good for it, but the ratings are, I don't know, that could be hate watching too. So I don't know. So let me, like I said, you get the feedback, you get the comments live doing that post game show. We don't get those. So, so let me know what you think. If you have other ideas for it, hit me up. Let me know. We want to be creative and have fun with it. I think it's good. We do a lot of so much Raven. I mean, no one else has a half hour Raven TV show after the game that night. And so I think if you care about the team, it's something you would want to watch. And I hope you, if you're not, give us a shot. And if you are, thank you much.
Yep. I hate to be the guy who says something phrased this way. I don't know how the best way to put it is, but I grew up on the stuff. I've loved it for years. It is nothing better than to just sit down, relax, and be able to see some of the highlights and have some high level discourse there. So if you don't watch it, It's great. I've enjoyed it for years, and it's an honor to have you come on here, Pete. We love having you on.
We certainly do.
Dude, that's awesome. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yep. We appreciate your time, bud, here on a Monday night, and hopefully we'll make it happen again sometime soon. In the meantime, enjoy the season. Hopefully you can get out and play a little golf here this fall, and do all the things that make you happy while the Ravens hopefully continue to win and continue to support your wallet. So until next time, thanks for hopping on with us, man.
Thank you, guys. Keep up the great work.
Absolutely.
Gourlami. Gourlami.
Arrivederci.
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 Arrivederci.